What's up, everyone, and welcome back to Metalcore Nerds, the podcast that combines pop culture and heavy music. This is the Hawkeye After Show covering Hawkeye Episode 3. We got an Echo backstory, we got Trick Arrows, and Kingpin confirmed? Maybe? I have Austin back here with me. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm stoked to talk about this episode because I think this show is really fun, and I'm like pretty hyped on it.
Dude, me too. I'm, as most people know, I like a lot of things. Like Marvel everything. Being very hot, I not almost everything. Venom Let There Be Carnage is an exception to that. I will shit on that movie as much as many times as I have an opportunity to.
Is that not worth watching? I didn't watch it. No. Totally skip it. Okay.
Yeah. Watch the end credits scene on YouTube. That's all I gotta know.
Okay. Yep.
It's infuriating. To me, I'm a Carnage fan. And I like Tom Hardy as Venom and Eddie Brock, but the story of that movie was not good. You can check out I have a spoiler version of it. I have a summary that I do in about 2 minutes, and that's probably all you need. I'm gonna be honest.
We're tangent off the bat. That's disappointing because I was hoping that Andy Serkis was, you know, was going to be able to take that in a good direction. I did not like the first film, and I understand that people dug it, but I was not a fan.
I liked it, did not love it. I think it was mostly because, oh man, I think Tom Hardy and Eddie Brock are really good, or Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock and Venom was a really good casting and decision. Yeah. And I liked how weird the movie was because Venom is very weird in the comics. It's a very weird thing. I will agree that it's kind of weird, saying weird again, but it's strange that he started off as an anti-hero in the beginning. And I really hated the last battle. It was a clusterfuck of CGI. I will say that in this movie, a thing that Andy Serkis probably helped with was that at least when Carnage and Venom were fighting, you could see what the fuck was going on. Cool. I will give it that. You can definitely
check it out.
The CGI is like phenomenal for what they do with the symbiotes. It's like, it looks incredible. That's like one of my big pluses of that movie is that the CGI looks unbelievable. I will give them that. And I like Tom Hardy in it. And that's pretty much the most I'll get. Like that. I don't want to talk anymore about it. We'll move on.
Moving on.
Let's before we dive into Hawkeye as we usually do, let's talk a little about what we've watched. Have you watched anything new this week?
After we got off last week, Succession ended up having one of the best episodes of that TV show ever, and so that show just keeps crushing it. So to anybody out there who doesn't watch Succession, I hope you give it a shot because it's really good. And I should have mentioned it last week. One movie I need to bring more attention to is a movie called Werewolves Within, which is like a small horror comedy in the vein of Shaun of the Dead based on the card series Werewolf, where you're dealt the cards and you have to determine who's the werewolf. And it's unfortunately not available anywhere to stream. So I bought it, but I'm always going to try to support these like small films. Werewolves Within, and the cast is kind of unknown. Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show, and then the girl from the AT&T commercials that you see every weekend if you watch sports, she's in it. And then also one of the guys from I Think You Should Leave is the main character. And I'm going to pull that up so I get their names correct because they are owed some respect. Milana Weintraub is the main girl character. Sam Richardson stars as the main character. And then Harvey Guillen is Joaquin in this. And it's really, really funny. And nothing earth-shattering, but Werewolves Within. Huge recommendation from my house on that one.
Chris from Geek Peek, if you're listening to this. Which you probably will be eventually. This sounds up your alley, my friend. He mentioned to me, I think after listening to last week's episode, he's like, yes, you need to watch Succession.
Because
he just messaged that to me randomly, and he's like, yeah, you need to watch Succession. And I was like, I did listen to his episode, and they mentioned Succession in it. But I was like, how would he know? You know, so he's like, watch it. So I'm guessing it was
I love that.
If I'm wrong, Chris, my bad, I guess. I did finish Midnight Mass last night. Wow, what a show that is.
Dude, off the rails towards the end. Whew. Like,
yeah, at the end of episode 6, I was like, fuck. Shit is going down.
spoilers for Midnight Mass?
Yeah, if you don't want spoilers for Midnight Mass, like, fast forward a few minutes.
The character design on the vampire was so dope.
I have to say, the things they changed about vampires, so fucking cool and refreshing.
Yeah.
Like the fact that their blood like cured ailments in normal people, and you just have to die, and if you drank the blood, you became a vampire. And they were just normal people. They were just, you know. And I love how they kind of explained it. It was like it could be like some sort of disease. Yeah. And everything like that. And even the ending when the girl says, I can't feel my legs. It's like proving the fact that the angel died. That when it's feeding, it didn't give a fuck about anything. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. It was wild.
I love that they called him an alien or an angel. And then the whole scene in the church and he's wearing like the Catholicism robe is so sick.
When he came into that, I was like, what the fuck?
Good. I'm glad you liked it. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's gave it high praise. It's just when I started watching it with Sam, she wasn't into the church stuff. It gave her like memories of childhood, I think.
Totally.
Which is fair. It's definitely like very church centric. I mean, it's implied in the name, but it's the whole crux of the show for sure.
You'll see that, not to get into my band, but The Undertaking's always going to dabble in some like religious like imagery, because I think that there's like a ton of power in the like the horror aspect of, I guess, church and what that has done to people in the past and stuff. And number one reason people don't go to church is because they've been to church in the past. And I think that there's like a lot of trauma that's involved in that stuff. So I always like when things are really tied to faith and spirituality, which again, you guys are going to hate me at the end of this, but just watch The Leftovers because they do a really good job of that.
I will watch The Leftovers, I promise. So yeah, I finished that and I'm trying to think if I watched anything else. I just started the second part of Masters of the Universe Revelation, Kevin Smith's Masters of the Universe animated show, which I really liked the first part. I know some people complained about it. I don't know. That's like a weird thing that I don't even care about, but I like that show a lot. I think it's very fun and cool. And Mark Hamill's fucking Skeletor. What the fuck more do you want than that? I don't know. But I didn't even finish the first episode, but so I can't really say much about it other than I thought it was cool so far.
This is not something I was watching, but for you listening folks out there, shout out to No Bragging Rights and our buddy Mike, who just released an EP. I'm giving him a shout out because the episode I met him on was our Black Widow recap. And so we've been messaging ever since, and just good dude. So shout out to No Bragging Rights.
I was going to bring that up. So I'm so glad you brought that up. You've been very good at things I forget. You bring it up. It's like you're completing my brainwaves or something. It's crazy. I did want to shout out Great American Ghosts dropped a new track too, which is also awesome. I haven't done a pull list in a few weeks. There hasn't been enough new music to do a full pull list section. So this is a nice little mini pull list section. Go listen to the new Bragging Rights record. Go listen to the new Vatican song. And go listen to and pre-order the new Great American Ghost record. They just released one song. I will say, Ethan, if you do listen to this, I was bummed you named it Kingmaker because I thought the band Kingmaker came back. And it's just your song title. So that's
And just for anybody who ever wants a metalcore nerds weekend where we watch movies and then play shows together, I'm trying to get Sean to put a festival together. He's not replying to it comments about that, but
it has been brought up to me multiple times, also by Tyler Small from Saving Vice. And I'm like, man, that's a lot of money for me to put up to make this happen. And I was like, that's why I'm skeptical about it. Personally,
That's true. But we'll figure it out.
Maybe one day, something like that. I mean, that's kind of a goal to have, like, you know, almost like a metalcore nerds kind of like con thing. Maybe one day that would be cool.
Watch a couple movies, have some panels, live panels, live podcast recording.
It'd be cool.
Live shows.
That's what I'm saying. I like the idea a lot. It's just the logistical version is what makes me have major anxiety.
So how much do you love the Kingpin?
Okay, let's get into this shit. So Hawkeye episode 3 titled Echoes. Very good title. So it starts off, we get to see My Lopez, aka Echo, as a child in 2007. I love how it, so I brought up the perspective things about like Lucky the Pizza Dog and Clint having the whole issue where his like hearing aid is off or out. And this episode gave me that exactly what I wanted with that. And the way they went in and out of it was beautiful. We'll get more into that a little later on. But Maya is deaf as a child already. We don't know if it was like a predetermined thing. And I didn't know this beforehand, but Alacqua Cox that plays Maya Lopez is actually deaf. I did not know that. I wasn't sure. I just wasn't sure. But an article came out right after this episode that Jeremy Renner and Haley Steinfeld learned basic ASL before even starting filming so they could communicate with her during the series, which is incredible and awesome and probably should have been done anyway, but still it is a very cool thing that they did those kind of things. And it makes sense with Jeremy's character, especially where he's at now, that he would need to learn basic ASL anyway. And she actually does, when it's revealed in the karate scene that she's an amputee, that she actually has that in real life too. It's not like a CGI or whatever, like that's real, it's legit.
So it's sick.
Cool they incorporate that into the character too. So shout out Marvel Studios.
Shout out Marvel Studios, but also tying back into Eternals with Makari and what they've done for ASL. And you saw like the reports that people are like super interested in learning ASL after they saw Eternals. And I'm just all for that. I think that that's really cool. And hearing that Haley Steinfeld and Renner like learned ASL, because I guess the actor, what's her name?
Alacqua Cox.
She was like super nervous coming onto set the first day, and that helped her feel better about it.
This is her first really acting gig too.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
So sick. Yeah.
Especially after this episode, I'm like, I would never have guessed that in a million years.
Same.
But yeah, we see little kid Maya Lopez. She's in the class. The teacher kind of alludes that she needs to pay attention, but then she's kind of realizing she's smarter than the average child. And then we go to the karate studio, which we see. Well, actually, before that, they have this amazing, amazing moment with her and her father, William, where she's asking if dragons are real. And this is very interesting. And I'm probably looking way too much into this, but he says, oh, they live in a different world, which in Shang-Chi and Tao Lo, there was two fucking dragons in a different world. Just saying. I don't know if he knows anything about it, but come on, man. come on.
Is it implied that he's the head of the tracksuit mafia?
I got the vibe that he was just like kind of like a general or like a higher up in it.
Okay.
That's the vibe now, I got.
Pause. Because on the Marvel casting stuff that we talked about last week, I was blown away when the actor's name is Zahn McLarnon. I'm totally butchering how to say that. If you've seen Fargo, which is one of my favorite TV shows, he was in the second season and just such a sick actor. And then he was also in Westworld. And just having a character command that much space in such little time, like, I think for me resonates, because you're just completely drawn into his performance, and he loves his daughter and he's taking care of her. So I was very disappointed to find out that he died in the first couple minutes of the show. And I assume he'll come back in flashbacks or something, but huge fan of that guy.
Yeah, to add to what you said, the little amount he's in this episode, the amount you care about him in such a little time just proves the fact of how of a class actor he is. Because it's from this conversation, you care immediately. They talk about the dragon, and the reason why I think he's not the head, or it wasn't the head of the tracksuit mafia, is because she even brings up like, oh, I thought you had enough money to send me to the deaf school. And he's like, I'm sorry, I couldn't, basically. He's in some money troubles. Like, they didn't dive deep into it, but there's something going on with that. And after that, we see the karate scene where she's training karate, and you see what seems to be her photogenic, or whatever you call it, the photo is it photogenic reflexes or whatever the terminology is, but she can see something and copy it basically.
Photographic memory.
Photographic reflex. Thank you. And you see her do that in the karate school. And then after she takes down this dude who's four times the size of her, she goes over to her dad and he says, hey, your uncle is going to take you home after karate. And then we see this big person that you only see like the waist down. You see his hand. He's wearing a black suit. He's got cufflinks on the suit. He pinches her cheek and there's a laugh. Not to say Kingpin is confirmed just yet, but I would find it hard to believe that this is anyone else other than Kingpin. Marvel Studios is not dumb. They know what they did with this. And if they deliver someone else that's not Kingpin, I feel like the internet is going to turn on the series immediately. Especially, like I said, in the first two episodes, they already pointed to him a bit. Just like how Loki did with Kang. And with that scene, and other things are referenced later, where Clint says, hey, there's someone higher up, you don't want to mess with them. Kazi talks with Maya later, saying, hey, we don't want to upset Uncle. They're in New York City, criminal underworld. It's got to be Kingpin, right? Like, who else is it?
So I kind of detest the mystery box. I hate mystery box stuff. And so I really, really need them to tell us sooner than later that it's him. Because the whole, like, calling him uncle stuff, that's just going to piss me off if they keep that going until, like, the last minute of the last episode. All that to say, Kingpin, yes, let's go Wilson Fisk. I'm stoked. It's him. It's him, which is really cool. But I really need them to like not tease it out more than they already are, because I feel like that becomes annoying. If it's not him, then we're all duped. But come on, guys, let's go. It's him. Let's show him. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, I actually didn't think about the whole mystery box thing until I saw someone post a tweet saying, have these shows relied on the mystery box thing a little too much? I want to take WandaVision out of the equation because the Mephisto of it all and the engineer of it all was on us. So, I mean, I guess the mystery of like what the fuck was going on was there, but it wasn't like a character reveal at the end. You know, it was more of just a personal journey. So that one I'll take out of the equation. Loki, obviously there was. And they reveal Wilson Fisk either this, not the, if they do it not in the finale, I'll be like, okay. Because if that's not the big mystery at the end, if there's other shit coming that is like a big surprise, I would like that a lot better. Like if they end up showing Kingpin at the very last scene, like that'd be kind of like, I don't think the story needs that. They've already like, again, they heavily hint at, hey, there's a leader. They don't really need to hide the leader anymore in this series. We're already halfway done. It would be weird if that was the finale of it all. I don't think they'll do that. At least I hope they don't do that. Falcon Winter Soldier kind of had the power broker thing, which was disappointing to me and I think a lot of people. So yeah, I guess that's, you know, two out of three so far that have had that kind of thing. And I totally, now that I read that, I was like, oh, I didn't really think about it that way. But I guess, yes. I mean, I guess the power broker wasn't, it was an overarching, but it wasn't really the point of the show. Whereas the He Who Remains Kang of it all of Loki was a big fucking deal. The power broker wasn't really a big deal. The big deal of that show is Sam Wilson becoming Captain America.
There's any point. There's no point for them to prolong the reveal because it's him. The fact that in the comics, he's like her adopted father, seeing her real father die, and then implying that her uncle has taken care of her. It's just, I just don't think that there's a point in delaying the reveal much longer. Cause oh my gosh, I just want Vincent D'Onofrio in the Marvel universe. Cause I think he's just going to chew up the scenery.
Oh my God. Yes. And to add to the Matt Fraction run, Kingpin is a very big part of the Matt Fraction run too.
Yeah.
You know, again, they don't follow the comics, and I will get to a comic thing they did in this episode. That's good shit. But then we go to the present time. Well, more so present time. It had to have taken place during the blip, of course. But we see Maya Lopez training in a boxing gym. You see more of the photographic reflexes of her taking down. You see her, see him like, or see her look at the dude's hand and kind of like predict what he's going to do, which I think is really, really cool. And then she's driving a motorcycle and she goes to Fat Man Auto Repair, kind of another Nazi kingpin, just saying. And we see Ronan fucking shit up. And there's blood splatter on the windows, people getting straight up impaled by the sword, which I don't know if we've seen action this brutal in the MCU. I know Falcon Winter Soldier kind of got there. And even that little scene in Endgame, he does slit a dude's throat. But still, this is was way more brutal than that. And I love that we got to see that. It's I saw someone kind of say like, hey, this isn't like Daredevil jail scene level, but it's like a nice step forward towards that. I don't know if they'll ever get that level, but this was still pretty brutal. And then we end up seeing Ronan kills Maya's dad, William, and they have like a really, really heartbreaking exchange with, you know, him basically saying go away. And I think it's more of him saying get out of this life, don't stay with these people, go do your own thing, says fly away little dragon. And leaves a bloody handprint on her face, which happens in the comics, which inspires her to wear like a white handprint, which I wonder if she'll do later on. Maybe. I do know that he had like this half star or like half sun neck tattoo that she had on embroidered in her leather jacket in present time, which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what did you think of this Ronan scene?
I think it's important to establish that he was very ruthless and very violent, and like there is this implied fear in the underworld, criminal underworld, that Ronan is this big deal. Like even her vengeance to trying to find Ronan now that he's back, quote unquote, I think it helps imply, like helps fill in some of the gaps that say like, okay, he was going through the underworld just killing everybody, and we saw it in Endgame, but I think this helps kind of flesh that out. And I thought it was a good decision. And I think it's like almost disappointing that we get Hawkeye more than we get Ronan, because that would be a fun thing to watch, is Jeremy Renner just being like a killer assassin with a sword going around.
Yeah.
And we get trick arrows instead, which I'm totally fine with. But
oh man, we'll get to the trick arrows because those were fucking sick. But yeah, this brings us back to where we left off in after episode 2, but it's morning. And the Traxxas Mafia hideout, which I thought this was absolutely hilarious, is in an abandoned KB Toys, which I know some of you might be too young to even know what the fuck a KB Toys is, which is depressing. But I thought that was wild. It was an abandoned KB Toys. Very funny. But it's morning, and they were captured at night, and they're still going in these little, you know, merry-go-round, whatever, dinosaurs. And it makes it seem like they kind of did it all night, which would have sucked a lot, to be honest. Like, that would have been terrible. So, good for them, I guess. So, there's this insane conversation between one of the Tracksuit Mafia members and Kate about him buying Imagine Dragon tickets for his girlfriend. But he really bought them because he loves Imagine Dragons. And her saying, well, you guys both have things to be sorry about. And I do love how she did. She says, well, at least you don't have to go to see Imagine Dragons. He's like, I love Imagine Dragons. I thought this interaction was hilarious. And then the bigger Tracksuit Mafia guy comes over and kind of starts intimidating Kate. And this is where you start seeing Kate get kind of shook. And I like that they show this, because like we knew, she's never really done this kind of stuff. Obviously she trained in, you know, martial arts and fencing and stuff like that, but she's never done real quote unquote superhero stuff. She just saw a dead body probably for the first time in her life a couple episodes ago. You know, now she's trying to have to fight off groups of dudes, which she's, you know, she's a 22-year-old woman. You're not going to be as strong as these dudes. Like, obviously you can outsmart them and fight better, but still, big challenge. And I do love how they did that in the first few episodes, of how she really struggled to keep up with them. Because, of course, she would. She has the skills, but she doesn't have the experience in that type of situation. And then Echo comes out. And you can tell that things get serious as soon as she enters the room. She commands a certain type of presence. And she starts questioning them about the Ronin suit. And I do like how as soon as she saw Clint, she saw the hearing aid and knew that he was hearing impaired. Obviously, his ASL skills aren't up to par with her because she was doing shit and he was like, I have no idea. So then Kazi kind of interpreted what was going on. Clint kind of reassured that, hey, she is not Ronin. She put the suit on. She didn't know what it meant. He's dead. They ask who got him then. And then he said he words Natasha Romanoff, which again, this is an awesome perspective where it was totally inaudible, but Kazi signed Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asked, how do you know? He said, I was there. And then they said it was very convenient that a dead person killed Ronin. Very convenient. And Maya gets very aggressive with Kate. And that's when she gets super, super shook, super freaked out. And Kazi kind of pulls Maya back, being like, hey, what are you doing? You're going overboard. Clint escapes. And this is where shit gets fucking pretty bonkers. I love this escape, him kind of going through the empty toy aisles, tricking the Tracksuit Mafia guys, getting his bow and arrows, and fighting Maya. And you can tell she is no fucking joke. She is hanging with Clint 100%. He gets away. He traps her with two arrows, which was dope. And I did find out from New Rockstars that the arrows he was using were made for target practice, so they are less likely to hurt people. And the whole time when he was hitting Tracksuit Mafia people, he was hitting them in non-lethal spots, like the shoulder or the arm or the legs or the hand. And the sequence where he jumps off in slow-mo and starts shooting people and shit, fucking dope. Hawkeye is badass, guys. Stop shitting on Hawkeye. I'm hoping the series brings some respect on Hawkeye's name. For the love of God. Give this man some damn respect. All right? Dude's a badass. He also has an insane shot that seems to clip Kazi's ear. I wonder if that'll cause him to have some hearing issues. Maybe that's a little too overboard with hearing issues for the show. Maybe not. I don't know. He knows ASL already, so, I mean, good for him. And it frees Kate. And I do like the pep talk he gave to him before he gave to her before he escaped, saying, hey, you got this. It's okay. Use your overconfidence in a positive way, pretty much. They end up escaping and getting out. Is there anything you want to say in this fight sequence before we get to the car chase? Because the car chase is a lot.
Shout out to KB Toys in the Escondido Mall. Love that place. I thought it was going to be Abandoned Toys R Us. And when it was KB Toys, I was okay with that too.
A deep cut right there.
I think it's important that they show that Echo is constantly observing, because that's how she's gotten to where she is in life. It, from what we've seen, and immediately they show her see the hearing aid. And then she's kind of like challenging Hawkeye that he doesn't need it. He's too reliant on technology. And then I like what they're doing with Kate, that they show the overconfidence piece, that she kind of just cares about people, and she's trapped by criminals way over her head, but she's still trying to like help this guy with his relationship and trying to relate. Cause he walks away and she's like, look, we're relating with these people or something. And I think she thinks she can talk her way out of it. And then I think it's important that then like immediately they show she's way out of her depth. And just again, like, you know, she thinks she can escape, but then Clint easily does. And she's like, how did you do that? I think that they're showing like how equipped he is in situations like that. And then for later in the episode, when he finally kind of gives her her due, she, you know, he's learning to respect her for what she can do. But I think that the early stages of that fight thing really showed that like where she is compared to Hawkeye, and how she needs to kind of get better. And I think she's so competitive. She's just watching and learning and trying to be like, okay, I need to get to this level so I can compete. You know, she's a competitor. So she's like, I got to compete with Hawkeye in this situation. So I thought that was good.
No, that was very good. I forgot to mention that there is a point where Clint tries to take out Maya's leg, and then it's the leg that has the metal prosthetic and gets clocked with it. And I love the ringing, and it knocks out the hearing aid. She stomps the hearing aid. He ends up picking it up on their way out. As soon as they get out, Kate sees a red Dodge Challenger. I'm bad with cars. Sorry, guys. Which actually is the same kind of car that they do a very similar car chase in the comics in the Matt Fraction run. But they're in the Charger. So it's really funny that she's like, let's take the Charger. And he's like, he obviously can't hear her, but he's like, we're not smashing that thing up, getting this car. And he's hotwiring her car. He ends up driving and they start going off, and Kate gets out to do the shooting. Clint has a bunch of trick arrows.
Why did he want her to drive? So that he could shoot?
Probably, yeah.
I would imagine. He knew how to drive. Obviously, he was capable of doing that. I was trying to pick that up because that's all that there was so much going on in that whole sequence, which was just delightful. Yeah. And so I was trying to pick up, like, is there another reason for why he doesn't want to drive? But I think it's so that he could be the one shooting.
That's the only thing I can think of too. But it's funny because I think she was even like, I don't know how to drive, which he couldn't hear again. yeah. Which would make sense if she's a kid who grew up in New York City. Why would she know how to drive? No one drives in New York City. You know what I mean? Like it would make sense. Not even the fact that she's rich. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, adds to it.
She probably had a driver. Yeah.
Oh yes. Oh, one thing I want to shout out. My friend John just got me this comic. Look at this shit. Look at this. Look at that.
Scotty Young.
Yeah, man. I'm glad you know Scotty Young. He's amazing.
But dude, I've spent way too many hours in lines at Comic Cons trying to collect all the pins that he put out at Comic Con. It's so stupid. Yeah,
the same friend got me I think a Captain America, Captain Marvel, and Thor Scotty Young pins. I love his art. He's amazing. Yeah. He'll buy Scotty Young covers just because they're Scotty Young covers. He's obsessed.
Yeah. I've been trying to track down some original art by him for years. If you guys follow comic art stuff, Felix Comic Arts, he used to represent him. And at Comic-Con a couple years, he had some amazing Spider-Man stuff. So I collected for a long time Spider-Man original art. And it was just always a little bit too expensive for my taste. And I'm kind of starting to sell some of it off now because it's time.
Yeah, that shit. Anytime I see like any kind of comic artist do original art that they sell, I'm like, I'm good. Like, I get it. I get why you're charging that money, but
yeah,
no, not for me, sir.
Like yes, $2,000 for
yeah. No. Not happening. So as we're in this car chase, we see a bunch of trick arrows, including a putty arrow, which is purple putty. I will say the CGI that was pretty terrible. They should have kind of made that a little better, but that's fine. The rest of the CGI in this, that I think that made it stand out, was because everything else looked so good. And there was also something else I was watching, and they were saying that everything inside the car was likely CGI'd, which if you never told me that, I would have said it looked like a real car. Which if you can do that shit, make the putty look normal. I don't know. Whatever. That's a small nitpick. There's a putty arrow. There's an exploding arrow, which I'm pretty sure Kate killed that person. I think
like a lot of people got really hurt in this episode.
Yeah, that person definitely probably died because that van exploded. There was only one person in it, but I'm pretty sure they're dead. A plunger arrow, which comes into play later. A wire release arrow that brings in all of the trees, which seemed like it was like a Lethal Weapon homage, that whole scene going through the by a Christmas tree shop. And then finally, the grand finale of all arrows, they're stuck on a bridge, and Clint says, hey, shoot up. She shoots straight up in the air, and then he has this arrow that has this blue hint on it, and then it comes into focus that has the PIM Particles logo on it. He shoots it up in there and explodes this fucking arrow that comes down and crashes into Kazi's truck, which explodes the back of the truck. I'm kind of shocked they didn't die either, but it's a Marvel hero. It's a superhero show with people who are gods and shit, so who really cares about semantics of that? And that moment was fucking phenomenal. And then he hands Kate a USB arrow, which has come into play quite a few times in Avengers and in What If. And
yeah, I like that.
She's like, you don't want to see what this arrow is going to do. And she shoots it at the big Tracksuit Mafia guy. I think his name's Ivan. And it just bounces off him like it's nothing. Which Eric Voss from Rockstar has brought up a good point that even at that speed, even a USB arrow would probably puncture someone's skin.
Yeah.
So he has this weird theory that Ivan is like super soldier serumed up or something. He did punch a car window out pretty easily. So, I mean, I guess it's possible.
But I think that was just a joke. I think that was
Comic relief. Like, yeah, I think it was just comic relief. I think he's looking way too much into that, but I did think it was funny. It just bounced off him. As soon as, like, I didn't think of that in the moment because I'm watching a show with this dude just shot a fucking pin part of arrow off. What the fuck am I thinking about real shit? And he just shot a USB arrow and it just bounced off him. I thought it was hilarious. And then they do the classic Avengers pose, Hawkeye escape, where they do the jump and turn and they escape on the subway. So
I do want to shout out, I want to shout out Children of Men for
the circle
they totally ripped off the circle shot in the car, which I just adore. Like, I almost wish that would have gone on longer. I understand how impossible it would be to do that. But if you're listening and haven't seen Children of Men or haven't watched it in a couple of years, one, go check that movie out. But Alfonso Cuarón did the shot where the camera just spins and it's this insane one take that they actually did practically. And I thought that that was a good homage to that scene. And just really well, it's just from a storytelling standpoint to show like how chaotic everything was and then show her trying to get out of the car to shoot. I thought that was really smart. And I think that the barbs between Clint and Kate are really good. And so I came into this show not knowing if I would like it. Just based on the trailers, I thought, okay, maybe they're going to get a little too cute with all this stuff. And I know on Twitter, somebody you were interacting with was saying it's too much like a television show. But I actually think that that's playing into its strength right now.
I agree.
Just the fact that their relationship is really fun. And I thought her like kind of making fun of him for all the different gimmick arrows. And when she explodes the van and she's like, there's four more arrows more dangerous than that. Like, I just thought it was like, they're playing really fast and loose with that scene. And I thought it was interesting and fun and very exciting. I saw on Twitter, somebody said that might've been one of their favorite action scenes that Marvel's done, especially in the TV shows, which was cool. And then I absolutely adored the scene on the train when they finally sit down and she's saying, like, we need to let the dog out, and he doesn't hear her and says that she's the best archer. And then he says that, like, they're like the same person. And I think that they're starting to kind of come to the conclusion that they're meant for each other. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I was just about to bring up that scene. I I loved their banter. And even when he can't hear her in the car, and she's like, if you turned around to give her a shot, and he's like, I think it was the same kind of moment. It's like, I turned around to give her a shot. He's like, we're communicating. I loved that. I love their dynamic. And that's kind of how it is in the comics, or even like I talked about the Avengers game that has Clint and Kate. And that relationship is like a relationship they've had for years and years in the game. And it's kind of the same in the comic too. But they are doing it flawlessly in this show. And they've done it in a really way that respects Hawkeye as how he's been. They didn't try to change Hawkeye into be someone completely different. They just have evolved on the character that's already been put in front of us, which I love that they did that. I completely love
it. And he's a caring person. I mean, obviously he's cared for Natasha and they have this relationship. He cares for his kids and his wife, obviously. And I think that sometimes my frustration with shows is when they take character beats on a little bit too long. And this was an opportunity where they could take like grumpy Clint and take that too far. And I think that they're doing a good job. One, he kept his hearing aid out during that one conversation. And she just like kept talking because she doesn't care. And just thought that then he puts it back in, but he actually is starting to care for her, which I think is important.
Yes.
Because if they would have made grumpy Clint go on way too long, that's fun. And like we got to move on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely realizing that there is a scene in that where she's like, we're in this together, as far as I'm concerned. And he doesn't disagree. He's just kind of like, he doesn't outright say it. Yeah. But his body language says, yes, we are in this together, which, like you said, it is very important. I have loved that up to this point. Even at the beginning of the episode, we've seen very annoyed Clint Barton that, hey, I've been through all of this fucking shit for like a decade and now, or over a decade in MCU time, because he lives through the 5-year blip, murking people for the whole fucking time. And now he has to deal with this shit even more. You know what I mean? But now he's realizing like, hey, I'm kind of the cause of this. It's not really her fault. It's kind of my fault. honestly, like he is kind of the root of this whole situation in a big way. Like he is facing the consequences of what he did, which is another important thing, which that was kind of a gripe with the MCU, is that they never really had to pay consequences, which I kind of agree with later on when they finally get into like phase 2 and 3. They kind of, it's like the whole gripe of everything is that it's them dealing with what they've done before, which is very, very important to move forward and to grow everything overall. And this next scene I want to talk about, heartbreaking. And I don't even have children, and it broke my heart. But so I can only imagine the people I've talked to who are like actual dads. I'm like, this scene must have murdered you. But they're back at the hideout. Clint gets a call from his son Nathaniel. His hearing aid is still broken. He can't hear what he's saying. So Kate helps out and writes down what he's saying on a notepad so he can talk back, which I thought was really, really cool too. And I think that kind of added to the level of like respect that he had for her, or, you know, like more of a bond he built with her. Mm-hmm. That she's like, hey, I just want to help people, like including you, like you're my hero, I need to help you out kind of thing. Eventually he talks about, are you gonna be home for the movie marathon? He's like, I can't make it, kid. But I'm gonna be back before Christmas. I should be back in like a day or something like that. And he even says, if you can't make it back, like I understand. It's just heartbreaking. It was so sad. Like this scene was so sad. Like
he better make it home for Christmas. That's
straight
all
up. Yeah, he needs to make it back before Christmas, for the love of God.
Please bring him back with his family.
Yeah. Oh, I would be so sad. Especially after this scene, man. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
they really laid it on your heart, man. Like, whew. It was rough. Then we go back to Kazi and Maya. Kazi says that her using the Tragic Mafia to hunt Ronin would upset their uncle. Another hint at Kingpin, possibly. And then Clinton and Kate get the hearing aid fixed, and then they're walking through this park in this really nice kind of conversation about how he talks about how Ronan took out upper management in the Tracksuit Mafia during his reign of absolute terror, and that there's someone at the top that you don't want to mess with. So it is implying that whoever this uncle is, whether it be Kingpin or not, and Ronan have had altercations before in the past, which is really mm-hmm. fucking cool to me. Like that a lot. And then we get the diner scene that we've talked about a little bit. I love that she drew him a new costume, which is a very comic accurate costume. And shout out to Tyler Small. He sent me an image that I think was in the LARPing scene of someone wearing something very similar to the comic accurate costume. Unless he ends up wearing this dumbass costume at the end, which I kind of hope not. But I really just think it was I think it was, and everyone just missed it. It was probably like a very fast kind of shot in the background or something. But if that does end up being something that was in the LARPing scene, hilarious that they actually hid that in there. Very, very funny. Where are we at here?
Does she, so right after that is when they start talking about the suit. And
yes,
I'm kind of surprised that she's not picking up on the fact that he's Ronin yet.
I think she knows.
Okay, because she was like, it's somebody close to you, which is why you have to keep it a secret. I was waiting for him to tell her. Like,
tell her.
Oh, it's me. Which, I mean, he didn't. And maybe they will by the end. But I feel like that kind of would help. I feel like that would like help her understand why that this is such a big deal to him.
She's smart, and I think she knows, but she doesn't want to take away him telling her that, you know. She's like respecting him and being like, doesn't want to call him out on it. So I think she does know, even the way she kind of said it's like it's someone close to you. It seemed like she knew, but she didn't want to blow up his spot. And I do think that he'll end up telling Maya too, possibly by the end, which could lead to
interesting.
It's interesting to see how she'll handle that news if he does end up telling her that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? There is this great interaction where Clint says, hey, you really need to name this dog. And she kind of goes through a bunch of like pizza restaurant names. and he smiles with pizza dog. But I really do hope she ends up calling him Lucky, the pizza dog, by the end. We'll see. I wouldn't be too mad because this dog is fucking adorable. And the way he smiled when he said pizza dog was amazing. So I wouldn't be too mad, but I kind of do hope he gets called Lucky by mm-hmm. the end. Then they end up going to Eleanor's penthouse because Kate says that the Eleanor or the Bishop security database can get files on all these criminals. So they go there. She hacks in, which is really dope that she knows how to hack stuff.
They start to do that because he asks if there's more stuff from Avengers headquarters
right.
that's floating out there, which I thought was another tie into what you were saying about the consequences. That's a big deal that there's things from the Avengers that are kind of floating around that they need to like get a handle on that, which makes sense because of the stuff that they did with the Vulture and Adrian Toomes and Homecoming and Mysterio and then Spider-Man No Way Home. They're implying maybe that like some of the bad guys get Stark tech, like you know, you're starting to see that this technology is starting to get out there and the ramifications of how bad that could be.
And we have Armor Wars coming out, which is going to be the big part of that. It's like that's what that whole show is going to be about. It's going to be about people getting Stark tech or maybe other tech in their hands, and Rhodey kind of cleaning it up with probably Ironheart. Those two have been confirmed to be in it, so that's not a spoiler, guys. Sorry if you thought that was a spoiler. But yes, and then she didn't know that the watch got taken from the auction, but the watch might play a bigger role than we thought, maybe. Now that he kind of brought that up, like, oh, I wonder, do you know anything else that was being auctioned off? Obviously, she didn't know that the Tracksuit Mafia guy kind of found the watch in it.
I wonder if it is an Iron Man suit. You mentioned that last week, and just talking about Stark Tech getting out in the wild. I wonder if that's like
it could be
part of how that happens.
It's possible. Who knows? I said, if it never gets brought up again, don't care. But if they did, it could be something cool. Who
we're not going to let anything go, Sean. Everything means something.
Yes, it always means something. They get to the penthouse, Eleanor's penthouse, and Kate brings up it was built by their great 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 grandfather, so it's been in the family. It makes sense why they restored it after the Battle of New York. It's been in the family. There might be some other criminal underworld reasons to why they want to keep it. Maybe not. Again, probably looking too much into that. When Kate does get into the database, Clint brings up, hey, bring up Cosby's file, which she does. And he's working for a company called Sloan Limited. There is a bunch of characters that have the name Sloan in Marvel lore, but they're kind of all small. So I think it's just a name for the series. Probably no significance to it whatsoever. Which this is likely a shell company that is used to make a legit front for the criminal stuff they do. Highly likely.
Clint references that he has heard of that company before. So I'm curious what the payoff of that is.
Yeah, very good point. I don't think I even caught that.
He says it in passing. He's like, I think I've heard of that. And then he starts to that's when he starts to like walk around the apartment.
He hears the noise and starts to walk around. Kate gets locked out, which big ups to Bishop Security. Like they got their shit together. That's for damn sure. And it's honestly a cool attention to detail because, you know, when you mostly see like hacking things in any TV show or movie, it's usually very convenient and easy and there's no ramifications for it. Or they're like, oh, they're locking me out, but somehow they find a way around it. But with this one, she just gets locked straight out, which I thought was a really cool like attention to detail with those kind of things. Clint hears a noise, kind of goes to investigate it. Then after Kate gets locked out, she also realizes that Clint is gone, and Clint is confronted by Jack with the Ronin sword at his fucking neck, which is wild. And I know some people are kind of theorizing that maybe, because I mentioned before that the swordsman was the mentor to Hawkeye. We don't really know if they know each other. And we didn't because it fades to black right as Jack comes into picture, and we didn't see if Clint looked at him and if he recognized him, and he very well could not, but maybe he does. Maybe he does know who Jack Duquesne is, especially if his, when I said father the last episode, it's his uncle Armand. My bad. Because it definitely seems like Armand is definitely very much involved in the criminal underworld as well. So he might know him from that. Who knows? I'm excited to see where next episode. There's been some clips from some trailers of Clint and Kate at like a dinner table with Eleanor and Jack, I think, or at least they showed Eleanor. So I'm guessing that's where our next episode picks up. Because
I was wondering about that. Yeah, because they've shown that heavily in the trailer that they're like working together. Yeah. And I bet you Jack is there too.
It would make sense.
They just didn't show that in the trailer.
Yeah. It would make sense. So I definitely think we're gonna pick up with that. Where next episode's gonna go, I have no idea. They did post a promo and it said the biggest surprises are yet to come, and they showed a flash of someone in this like spy suit, which could be Elena, maybe.
It's gotta be. She's gotta
be Elena.
Wait, shoot, did she get, I had it up last week. Did she get credited for 4 episodes or 3? Because if she got 4 episodes, then good on her agent for getting her one more episode credited than she deserved. Not deserved, that's the wrong way to say it.
What, Florence Pugh?
Yeah, she's...
Oh, I didn't even know she was credited that much.
That's what, Vera, I don't know how to say her last name, is credited for like Farmiga? Yeah, she's credited for like all 6 episodes, which whenever somebody's like not in an episode, but they get credited for it, you're like, oh yeah, you have respect in the industry.
True. I mean, she was listed in the credits still, and she was not in this episode. So
Florence Pugh is credited for 3 episodes, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, so
then she'll probably show up next week.
Sorry if that's a spoiler, people. I'm so sorry.
I mean,
good news. Echo's father is credited for 4 episodes.
For one more, right?
Yeah. For 4 total. So.
For 4.
So I'm sure we'll see him in flashbacks or something.
Wow.
Maybe not.
Okay. Cool. That's dope. That's good news. I thought I heard someone say he was only in 2.
Get off IMDb. You're spoiling the show.
I'm just kidding. I don't care.
live spoilers. We're researching spoilers on the.
I mean, as long as it's not giving away specific plot details. I mean, me saying Kingpin is in the show is technically a spoiler, which, I mean, it is pure speculation at this point. I don't know for a fact that he's in the show. It's just all the facts they're giving me is telling me he's in the fucking show. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, that's all I'm saying. As an intuitive viewer of a TV series, you're picking up the clues that the show is directly giving you.
Exactly.
And that was pretty heavy-handed. Now we know an extra layer that it's Kingpin in the sense that we know the relationship and stuff, but and that's one of the things that I'm trying to, as a viewer, I'm always trying to learn that is, like, you know, we're always jumping ahead to these extra things and putting extra meaning to stuff, and there's a level of consuming this media where you have to just like let the show tell you what it wants to tell you. And then
exactly,
because we're nerds, we like know way too much.
Yeah, and I think I said this before, I'm fine with speculating, like I said with the watch, like, oh, maybe the watch does mean something, or maybe I'm looking too much into it. Either way, I don't care. I'm here to take in the story they're telling me, and this story has seriously surprised me in a way where this is becoming one of my favorite MCU shows to date, which is saying a lot, because I loved WandaVision and Loki. Loki is in my top 10 of Marvel projects ever. WandaVision is like just out of it. So
is it because we had low expectations?
Maybe. I was super stoked for this show, especially with knowing some of the comics and then reading the whole run before. But I definitely didn't think it would give us an episode like it just did. Because I think another part of it, like you're talking about, where like, yes, this does feel like more like a TV show than the others, but it does, to me, like you said, it's a strength. And this episode felt so human, which we've never really gotten that kind of perspective in the MCU. You know what I mean? We've never gotten a true human perspective. Maybe some stuff with Tony Stark, but he's also a fucking billionaire that built a fucking suit that he flew around in. You know, mm-hmm. That's not very relatable in that sense. Like when he kind of suffered from the anxiety and the PTSD, like you could kind of relate to that, of course. But overall, like you can't really fully relate. I mean, also Clint is like a trained murderous assassin. You can't really relate to that, but the human moments in this episode, whether it be with Maya, whether it be with Kate, whether it be with Clint, like they're all very human, and I cannot say enough how fucking sick that is. Honestly.
Do you know when this show was filmed? Because I'm wondering if Marvel is starting to learn how to tell TV shows, how to tell stories through TV shows, and I think that we saw that. WandaVision, we messed up. We thought that show was going to be a lot different than it was, and like I said,
that's on us.
I think I said it to you that if I knew it was just going to be like an intimate reflection on trauma and grief that, and that's what the show is going to be. I think we would have enjoyed that more, which I thought that was awesome. And the episodes were so short, so I think we were always kind of left wanting. And so I'm just wondering if they've now learned with a couple of shows under their belt, like how to write a TV series, how to pace it, and even just showing us that it's going to be 6 episodes. Like, you know, I think that they're showing us the story that needs to be told. I think that that was always a problem with the Netflix shows, that it would be like 10 or 11 episodes, and then you have too these long side plots and that you don't even care about. And I think that this show is specifically staying really close to 4 characters, you know, Hawkeye, Kate, now Echo, and then Jack and Eleanor. So there's like a couple characters you care about, but that all kind of stays in the same orbit. We're not going off on different tangents. So I'm kind of just wondering if Marvel is learning how to tell these stories, which, oh my gosh, if they can just crush TV shows.
Keep going.
We're just like in for such a treat the next couple of years.
I think they
probably treated the first few, which makes sense, as like shooting a big long movie. And that would make sense. Like, that's what they're used to. And I think for WandaVision, it worked for the most part. I think Falcon the Winter Soldier kind of suffered from it a little bit, but I think it's mostly because of the COVID of it all that had them made them completely restructure a part of the story, and that made part of the story fall flat for a lot of people, including me. But the highs in that show were fucking incredible. Like, Sam Wilson becoming Captain America was unreal. I was like cheering in my living room for that scene.
Loki definitely felt like a movie just because the stakes were so high, but it was also kind of every,
just like this series, every kind of episode left off with a cliffhanger, like a TV show level, HBO level cliffhanger, you know? So, and I think these were the later ones. And I think having someone like Michael Waldron, who has written and produced Rick and Morty, and he also was like the dude behind Heels, which if you have not watched Heels, even if you're not a wrestling fan, the show is an amazing drama. If you are a wrestling fan, it's just going to add to your interest in that show. But he was like the showrunner in that, and that show has done very, very well too. I think maybe that kind of helped too, bringing in more of these, which they had Matt Shakman, who is a TV guy with WandaVision. But, you know, I'm sure that was a big different process for him anyway, doing a kind of Marvel level thing. But yeah, like you could be totally right that now they're, which would make sense that they would learn as they go along more things of how to make this shit work. But yeah, you're probably 100% right that they're only going to keep getting better with this stuff.
It would make sense. I think I had low expectations for this show. I think I was going to tune in on, you know, Wednesday morning.
Did you mute yourself?
Did I disappear?
Oh no. Some technical difficulties here, guys. If you're watching on YouTube, Austin's confused face is worth it, to be honest. No, you're still quiet. No, I can't hear y'all. So we're going to wrap this up for this one. We'll be back next week with episode 4. See what this shows bring us. Thank you again for joining us. If you're new to Metalcore Nerds, thank you for joining us. If you are coming back again, thank you for always being a part of this. We actually just passed 10,000 downloads, which is incredible to me that many people have downloaded this, whether it's one time, a million times, whatever. Super fucking cool. We're going to keep this shit rolling on and on. See how much this podcast can grow in the future. But until next week, until next time, see you later, nerds.